interviewing Alec Jones, right? Now, let me see. All right, Alec. Now, first of all, I would love to ask you a little bit about your childhood. I know you come from a large family, but I don't really know how many and what effect it had on making you the very special man that you are.
Well, I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio, in January of 1898. I was the second in a family of 8 children, 4 boys, 4 girls. My father and mother came from the suburb of Gilmont, Virginia. They were in America about 10 or 12 years when I was born. My father was a rather learned person. He was a teacher, a Hebrew teacher, but an organizer also. And we were very much interested in everything Jewish. He was one of the founders in Cincinnati of mostly Jewish philanthropic organizations such as a Free Burial, Free Loan, corresponds to our Hebrew Institute here. It was called there the Jewish Board of Education. The first settlement house with Dr. Boris Logan. He also was the first president of the Mojave Tzion, which was the predecessor of the Zionist Organization of America. As a result of these things, there were constant visitors in our house, and the leaders of these various movements. Sishkin, Shmaryahu Rabin, and other Europeans who were spreading the gospel of Zionism, the early days of Zionism, the visitors. And my father escorted them to the various cities of the South to organize small groups, particularly a little begging bowl called the Jewish National Fund. My mother, on her side, was the eldest of 4 daughters. Her father, aged 28, left his small village in Lithuania for the first group called the Bibu, who went to Palestine and organized the first colony in Israel, in Palestine. He only lived about a year and a half, and had an opportunity to bring his wife and children over. He died of malaria, some sort of native plague, and was buried in the Seal Cemetery on Mount of Olives. It has been a tradition of our family to visit this grave throughout the years, my mother having gone in the early 20s. My brothers and sisters, myself, have visited from time to time. And on every visit, we did a paid pilgrimage. During the years of the Germanic occupation to East Jerusalem, the cemetery was desecrated. My grandfather's grave was destroyed. Unfortunately, in 1950, immediately after the state found it, my wife and I went over there and we found the pieces, the headstone, and we put them together. They are now in the sealed cemetery. In the original sealed cemetery, we found what is now Hotel Intercontinental. On every visit, it's a tradition of the family to pay their respects. We went to all the children, including public school in Cincinnati, and when I was about Christian Jewish families in Beaufort. And we knew very little of distinction between Jews and non-Jews. We had lived very peacefully and comfortably together. After graduating from high school in 1916, I was admitted to Yale University. First of our family, I attended Eastern University. My older brother had entered the University of Kentucky at Lexington. After I was at Yale for a year, I suggested that my brother transfer, which he did. And thereafter, my younger brother, one of my younger brothers also attended Yale, and my three sisters, the next three sisters, all attended Smith College, and the youngest sister attended the University of Cincinnati, and the youngest brother, the baby brother, went to Ohio State University. At Yale, my brother majored in math, physics, was outstanding, was assigned to Niels Bohr. He came to the United States during World War I. This is his assistant. While I was in Yale, World War I broke out. As a result, I was a member of the Yale Student Army Training Corps, and later the Yale Naval Training Unit. While at the Yale Naval Training Unit, I became the assistant to the admiral, in charge of the Yale Training Unit, and as a result had experiences, military experiences, which I had never expected. While at Yale, while taking the entrance examinations for Yale at New Haven in September 1916, Charles Rosen was sitting next to me, and 4 or 5 days later, when the announcement of the results was to be admitted, would be admitted, was announced, he was also sitting next to me. And both of us having been admitted, we became fast friends. This friendship continued through the remainder of his life. At Yale, I majored in economics, history, and pre-law, and then entered Yale Law School. Because of World War I, they had telescope terms, so we went through the summers as well as the winter terms. I graduated from Yale Law School in September of 1921. One of the 5 top men of my class. And as a result, I was elected to Yale Law Journal.
Alec, I know from things you've mentioned over the years that you were a member of a very distinguished class at Yale.
We're going to get into that later.
All right. I won't forget it. And also, I was interested in the fact that you said even though you lived in the South, you didn't encounter much anti-Semitism in your growing up years. And yet
I was too unknowing to recognize it. But I certainly did not feel it. As a matter of fact, even when I in high school, even in my college days, I was very little aware of it, despite the fact that I knew at the debut parties being given the remarks, which I was not aware of.
And your classmates
were. But my classmates and I were very, very friendly, and I engaged in every undertaking that the class participated in, including the organization of the Yale Prom Committee, and student demonstrations. I like this.
What kind of student demonstrations?
I like to day when I was about 9, and there was an announcement that the chancellor of New Stanford University, who was anti-war, was going to hear a speech at the end of the fall. And being by nature pacifistic, I made up my business, I went to work for him. And to him, as I approached the hall, there was a band playing, as far as playing the deal. Military band, student army band, was playing the Star Spangled Banner. I didn't know if I should continue to walk or stand still or what to do. Most students were standing around the band, very few were entering, a few older people, a few faculty members were entering the hall, trying to get the party. I'm only going to fall ceiling about 1,200, and about 30 people. Mm-hmm. The chairman's things were going on, what else? And all during William Markov's introduction, the speaker, and all during the speaker's speech, the band, the Yale Madhouse Act, continued to play the Star Spangled Banner. And I didn't know whether I should stand or sit. I was terribly uncomfortable. I only heard about half of what he said. So we had one ear to move to the band outside, and some of the noises within the theater outside. I came out of the hall, of course, it was going to be. It was a good experience. I never got over it. But I must confess that it reinforced my attitudes. Rather than changing my attitude. I'm quite stiff-necked throughout life because I work really stiff-necked about certain things. But for me, there could be no other attitude in one of these things. I opposed the world despite the fact that I was in uniform. I was in uniform because every student was in uniform. No student was the same because they had to wear a uniform. I assumed I was a training car, and then when I switched to the end of the training, because at this time we weren't in the war, we were in the war in 1917. But then this is 1916. And I said, well, this experience has never left me, because I realized that my classmates were as knowledgeable as I was. They were as patriotic as I was. And perhaps I believe it was peaceful. And I developed at that time a certain respect for those whose attitudes were different than mine. But with that respect, I would say I made a strength to come back. And I didn't have to yield. As a matter of fact, I probably went a step forward and realized that in the future I would remove any civic national cause, Elizabeth, somebody would have to be a little farther out. And I made my mind then, with my education, and with my type of thinking, maybe because of injury, that I would stay a little bit farther out, just to move the cause a little bit forward. At Yale, I was introduced.
I just want to say one thing.
I was fairly green. I was naive. I think it was, we were living in Newport, Kentucky then. And I think it was very, very small town. I didn't know the ways of the world, and I must confess I call them relatively fast. But I didn't know them, and because I didn't know them, I had great respect for those who did know the ways. Not my necessarily the problem. I always have a desire to be an individual. And this is probably a great pleasure and also a great pain to I did agree with my particular point of view, and sometimes my point of view is not necessarily conducive to the betterment of my business or my business relations. But at the same time, I maintain my positions. However, I must say, on the other side, I was very fortunate. I had the most marvelous partners. My actors come to say, Charles Wilkins, my partner, all my girls and advisors. And never in all history, in all our history together, even if it's a be with me, was there any problem whatsoever. On the contrary, he encouraged me. And because of his encouragement, I was able to do so many more things, so many things I wouldn't have ordinarily had the strength to do, nor the financial capability of doing, nor the wisdom of carrying that. I also had Willis Robinson, had Ian Paul as a partner. And all these men, there was never a time, even with his agreement, they never in any way discouraged me. On the contrary, it was mostly encouragement. So I was very happy in this respect, although I knew myself that they are my customers and the people I did business with, so I thought it was disapproving very strongly of some of the attitudes that I took, particularly in public causes. As a matter of fact, I like to think that the cause that interested me most, the cause of Israel, the Palestine, Israel, Zionism, despite the fact that I respected, accepted, elected, chosen as a leader, there was a certain mistrust of me and my constituency because I did not follow the ritualistic precepts of Judaism. I fought openly a big battle at Malabar Hospital, with the old Malabar Hospital, the Kashrut, even though I did not to have kashrus, to the right to have kashrus for those who want to. I must say that those whom I represented always had in the back of their minds a little mistrust of me. The same way I'm a labor Zionist, because I'm a national capitalistic category, espousing all the labor socialist programs, honestly and deeply felt, somehow or other could not reconcile this with my modus vivendi, nor my Zionist activities. I had exactly the same problem. When I was the president, when I was fighting all the battles, and I couldn't quite believe that anyone whose interests were so removed from some of the exercises, university education, and of course the law, and public health, and art, and all of it in literature, in ordinary, in literature. I couldn't understand how anybody could be also as intense about his interest in Jewish history, Zionism, and the creation of the Jewish state. This dogged me on that road, but it didn't change me. I learned a little bit of it, I understood it, I respected it. I wasn't thrown by it, but I knew that they would have this problem. What they didn't was I had a greater problem than them.
But they were easy to categorize, and you were not.
Well, I don't know what they were. But anyway, I was first introduced to design and of course at home. But this was not much of an organized movement. It wasn't until a small organization was founded at Yale immediately after the Balfour Declaration in 1918. Small, but Charlie Rogan was very instrumental in this. I think it was a new territory of people. Found the first little group, and the group visited by, at that time, Judge Judy and after the Second Circuit Court of Appeals in New York, who represented Brandeis, who was on the court, and Felix Frankfurter, all who father in the Yale Law School. Charles Rosen's father came often to visit Charles, and Rosen in the law school, and he was a year behind in the law school because he didn't take the summer courses. Asked me, would I come to the after law school? And I'm going to serve in my room. What I kind of heard in London, I'm a servant of, and that is, there were six brothers and sisters, and the younger, my brother and myself. And we had very mapped out careers for them, totally out of the economic services of my parents. And we would have to work, so my brother and I, my brother also continued his education, they also studied law and music. And we decided that we would have to derive some immediate income to support that time where there was another brother at Yale, and there were already two married Smiths then. And so I decided to, also on the advice of Reed Howard Taft, who was not professor at Yale Law School from the time, that maybe I get about 4 or 5 years experience, although it was indicated at the time that they wanted me to teach at Yale Law School. I thought it was a good idea, and so when Charles' father asked me what, I said, I wasn't quite sure if I wanted to come to business careers. I said, well, why don't you and Charles come to Pittsburgh and go in business together? I said, Charles, so I came to Pittsburgh on October 1st, 1921. And six or 7 months later, he was at the investment banking firm, which was named Rosen. This is how Charles was doing myself. A few years after that, in 1923, we were through the Rise purchased from Leon Falk Sr., Morris Falk, and Mr. Sunstein, a chemical plant at the Carnegie, which was then called Falk and Company. The main product was the processing of Menhaden oil as a substitute for linseed oil in paint. It was going on for Prosper, as the Falk Company. And we engaged in several other enterprises. In 1926, Leon Falk Jr. graduated from Yale, became a partner in Falk and Company. Arthur Rosenblum graduated from Yale, became a partner in Rosenblum Law Firm. We created the Development Corporation of Pittsburgh, which then used to build apartment houses, which I became the president. At that time, we financed Western Hall Hotels, both in Pittsburgh and in Detroit, which I'm the chairman of the executive committee. This is all in 1927 and 1928. Came 1929, and all of my enterprises are separate like everybody else. And from then on, I began to pick up the pieces and try to put them together again, which I did. Probably 50 years ago, by the time I decided to retire, the company was much more interested in what I called the unfinished business, which dealt with many, many public causes and many fields of endeavor, which I thought I was qualified, which my conscience demanded that I give some attention to. On a general line, were in the field of education. I returned to the University of Pittsburgh in 1928 and 1929. Studied the Greek classics. Earlier than that, I had taken a full accounting course at Duquesne University. In about Carnegie International Exhibition on my stay here. And then she purchased my first painting.
When was it? What year was it?
I would say early 20s.
But the International was already established custom.
I started 1897. I arrived here at the end of 1921. So 1922 was the first one. It's always happened to be here on those days. And from then on, I was the new year, which is a couple of months painting. So after a period of some 50 years now, I've accumulated quite a few books that have been torn apart.
Was there anyone who guided you in your art purchase?
Very good question. I'm going to get it up, and I'm going to do it now. My sister's granddaughter, she took the first appreciation of art course ever given at an American university. It was given at Smith.
Who is that?
My sister, Lancy. Who was a pretty good artist herself. She had studied in high school and in college also. She said, but that was it on the side. That's for a college course. Smith was the first college actually to have a course in appreciation of painting. My sister Lancy took that, and she graduated in 1926, I think it was 1927. My father suggested that I take her to work. My younger sister then moved to Cincinnati. I think we drove to New York for a 3.5 month trip.
Was that him?
Pardon? Yes. My sister Lancy and me. And during that 3 months, my sister Lancy gave me a first-rate course in the appreciation of art. I must not say I picked her brains, and I drained her of all I thought she knew. I could never get over it. My little sister knows so much about Tintoretto and Poussin and Monet and lesser known artists, every school, including the moderns. She was in the history of William Kandinsky and play, names that nobody ever knew, and also in the history of the non-objective paintings, of course, I never seen. Met some other bread she suggested I buy some of them at the time. So I kind of for practically nothing of the German inflation. But I didn't understand them yet, and they had sunk into my marrow at that point. Furthermore, I had attended whatever international whole series of lectures, I attended every one of them. And unfortunately, I was guided by the then experts who were writing for the art world, and the Sun, and other great newspapers, unfortunately, appreciation is conventional. And most of the things that I acquired in those days, the presentation, went to mid-30s, after much discussion with Sister Lancy, much visiting art museums, and returning to work several times after that, understand and appreciate the abstract and the objective, and all the other school and probably. But to get back to, before I get into the art, I would like to say that we have a very close knit family life. We were more a tribe than we were a family, because everybody worked to help everybody else. Our funds were a common pot, and each one drew as he needed. There was no such thing as what I have, what somebody else has. And the mortgage on the house had to be paid, the monthly payments had to be paid. The money came from all the sources, from anybody who had it. Whether I was working in Pittsburgh, or my brother was working in Cincinnati then, after all my sister and brother were working their way through college. We all went to a summer common pot. And this is the way we lived together. And this is the way it has been and doing the past years. That's the way. My father and mother became very much interested in opening their children's way. Even though they fighting me. That's something that I would often like to think of when we speak of the generation gap today. I'd like to think of the other generation gaps and wonder whether or not I have the severe gaps in your experiencing today. When I think of the gap between my father and his father, and mother, when he brought over from Canada, when I was about 15 years old, I guess. And he already is. In the United States for 25 years. But the gap between him and his parents was rather little. So remote, even though they had everything in common. My father at that time not only was well acquainted with all these leading lights in Georgia world, but he even encouraged this letter, despite the fact that they were reformed Jews, and my father was an Orthodox Jew. My father knew every president. In fact, every member of the faculty who was interested in on the mission or anything like that. They always came to our house and we knew them all. And even to this day, some of the faculty of the Union College are mostly my friends, my sisters, and whenever I came home to visit, I was there. This illuminates my respect for difference. My father had a great respect for difference. Because the gap was so great between my father and his father. The really gap between my father and me and his children were even greater. And my father had no knowledge whatsoever in universities. What went on in the customs, particularly the places like Yale, which were aristocratic. Wealth institutions. You can never understand either some of my thinking of the likes or why my approach to American English and French literature was much deeper than my approach to Jewish literature. Despite the fact that they taught me to read Yiddish, some Hebrew, occasionally read the story of Shomalikum and Mendel, the poet writers of the day, and some of the leading articles in the Jewish Daily News, the Jewish Forward. He had difficulty understanding how his children would be so deeply engrossed in literatures of all other cultures and so little knowledge of his own culture. You can understand why we didn't. Of course, there were very few of them translations in those days, and I guess he couldn't understand why we were so lazy as to not work a little harder and try to understand these in the original language. He didn't know very much about math. Physics and calculator, special ed, economics, history, common law, some special ed, or the art and music, my brothers and sisters specialized in. The gap was very, very large.
Pardon me, was your father not involved musically at all? I just assumed that was part of the whole atmosphere.
You could hear from you, too. You could sing the Russian song, the Polish song. That's not a problem. You could hear the Hebrew songs.
And yet your older brother Ben was a fine violinist.
Well, my brother Ben was 6 years old. My father bought him a violin. And he bought one for me, and we had a piano for my sister. And though he was totally unaware of the real me, he was aware of that for somehow or other this should be done. Where he got that, I don't know.
Was
anyway,
that your
mother's
influence?
Pardon?
You think that now?
My mother had so many children. She was so busy. You know, baking and washing and keeping the place clean and keeping the children clean and getting us off to school and seeing that we were well and everything like that. But my mother had such wisdom. And super great dedication to the children and the family. And all the causes which my father was interested in. She was just an active all the time. She couldn't get around very much because her economic circumstances were such that she had to figure out a house and take care of all the chores. I always like to think of the Passover Seders and the family always gathered, and all of my father and mother were alive, then the in-laws and grandchildren, was always 15 or 20, and my father was whipped. I would like to think of the four questions were asked by the youngest in your family. And this was a rather long, drawn-out thing, but my father elaborated on the story of history, some of the commentary, and so on. It took a long time to get to the four questions. And we got the four questions and we asked whether it was the youngest at the time. My father kind of leaned back with a big smile and said, any other questions? And this led us in many, many directions. But as long as it lasted, sometimes it lasted until 12 o'clock in the morning, my father wound up by singing, as I said. Sang the song of salvation. She heard him sing the whole thing with my heart. But he knew it. It was a very happy time. Poor, but ambitious without knowing we were ambitious. What drove us, I don't know. The accident of my going to Yale, the first one coming to the East, was a peculiar kind of an accident. There happened to be a brewery in Pittsburgh called Wiedemann's Brewery. And Carly, a very wealthy people, Carl Wiedemann, they didn't live in a home there, they lived in Narragansett, places like that. And Carl Wiedemann went to prep school and went to Yale. One day, my teacher was, some college kids in those days used to read at Stover at Yale and so on. He said to me one day, why don't you go over and see Carl Wiedemann? Ask him about Yale. Dumb as I was, I went over and see Carl Wiedemann. At that time, I had been awarded a Fleischmann Scholarship to universities like 4 years free tuition for that auditorium. And come and see Carl Wiedemann. He said, sure, why don't you go to Yale? His background is ambiance. His way of life had absolutely no relationship with mine. Him was as natural for him to go to Yale as it was unnatural for me. I took him seriously. I said, what do you do? He said, we write and ask for a catalog. And so I said, well, I wrote and asked for a catalog. I didn't even know you were supposed to take the examination. And finally, I got a dinner. I asked how was going to work his way through Yale. And, told me all about these things, and the catalog, and letters, and Monday I said, well, father, and I said, well, I hadn't told him about all these Scottish ones. I said, well, I know, I'm going to Yale, I'm going to go to Yale. And I said, well, you have a scholarship for 4 years, and then that was $500 a year in those days, but that was a lot of money. At University of Kentucky, it was free. That's why my brother went to the University of Kentucky.
But your scholarship was at the University of Cincinnati.
What are you going to do about that? I was born and I already wrote on the program. I thank him very much. I'm going to my room example. My father looked at me and smiled and says, you know, in our tradition, he says, there's an expression. He says, you ever throw out the unclean water to get clean water?
But you had already.
But I had already. And I went to New Haven and I took the first thing I got in. Anyway, I also wanted to say just one couple of highlights, of course, in my high school career. Particular always was. And so we had a debating society and an oratorical society. I'll tell you something about first. And of course, in my junior year, I won the silver medal. In my senior year, I won the gold medal. I wanted to talk about that because this senior year, 2016, I don't forget the subject I wrote about because the subject has come many times. At that time, the Medal Bayless case in Russia was a matter that threatened Jewish life in all Russia. It was a blood. It was the case where the accused the Jews of being Christian blood and the Passover ceremony. And all the bales was accused of having killed the Empress of the Year of Blood. And he was gave rise to the war for the Soviet Union over the whole Russia and Civil War. In 1914, 1915, the case was tried in 1916 before the war. And I chose for my subject the defense of the Jews.
Yeah.
And my senior candidate play in charge of the book. And I won the first prize, but this is the first prize I ever won writing on a Jewish subject and speaking on a Jewish subject.
That was significant and prophetic, I would say. Alec, I.